Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week, we'll be talking with someone whose name you probably recognize. What you may not know is that he also owns a chicken with a broken wing, a deaf cat, and a very large guide dog.
Eric Weinmayer has engaged in many extreme sports challenges and adventures. He was the first blind person ever to summit Mount Everest, but by then he had already summited the highest peak on each of the other six continents. He ice climbs, he rock climbs, he solo paraglides, he solo whitewater kayaks, and many, many other extreme sports, achieving record accomplishments in many of them. We will be talking to him both about some of these adventures and also about No Barriers, an organization he co-founded whose mission is to help people with many sorts of challenges face barriers head on. But first, for our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Eric Weinmayer.
If you're interested in the outdoors, don't let blindness be the barrier. You know, it's scary when you're blind to just go and open yourself up to new things. But go join your mountaineering club, your hiking club, your climbing club. On the East Coast, there's the Appalachian Club. You know, I mean, you show up at the doorstep of one of these meetings and you just like, hey, I'm blind. I don't know anybody, but I'm really interested in this. People will take you under their wing and they will mentor you and you will have a line of people wanting to guide you and hike with you. So you just have to open yourself up to those new experiences. And that's what I did. When I moved out to Arizona as a teacher, I joined the Arizona Mountaineering Club. And I had all these great people who were like, I've learned so much from the mountains and I want to teach you everything I know. And it was like the great honor of my life to have these like Yoda mentors that taught me.
Yeah, I think as you say, many people are very eager to help someone else who needs the help. And it's just a question of, are you open to receiving the help?
People are craving to help. Like in this sort of world, you know, like the sort of modern world that we are in, like there's a lot of selfishness and a lot of people feel like they want to give. They want to connect themselves with something special. And I have friends that are running Ironmans and they just like put out a Facebook post. Hey, will someone train with me? They'll get like 10 people. Yeah, I'd love to train with you. So it's actually, you're 100% right. You got to open yourself up to the world.
Oh, he is so correct in so many ways. What a great attitude.
Support for Eyes on Success is made possible by
Hadley Institute for the Blind and Visually Impaired, offering the 2017 New Venture Business Competition to help blind entrepreneurs turn their ideas into actual startups. More information and submission criteria are at www.hadley.edu/NVC.
And if you'd like to learn more about supporting Eyes on Success with your own special announcement, we can be reached at hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Let's start by meeting Eric Weinmayer.
My name's Eric Weinmayer, and I live in Golden, Colorado. Right here, I'm in my house, and it's a beautiful town where they make Coors beer. That's how people know us.
Golden has other assets, like its natural beauty.
It's got great rock climbing. About a half a mile behind my house, I can go rock climbing on North Table. There's great mountain biking. I mountain tandem on a tandem bike. There's great running and hiking and all around these great mesas and little foothill peaks, and then west of here is amazing sport climbing, great rock climbing. There's some frozen waterfalls in the winter that are great, and then just further up the road is a lot of downhill skiing. We also have a creek that runs through town with a built-up kayaking course, so that there are these little drops and waves, so you can practice your kayaking as well, right in our little town. So it's a kind of an outdoor mecca for people.
And that's one of the reasons we're here, to have some fun outside. I'm sure you've taken advantage of almost all of those activities.
I've taken advantage of all those activities, for sure. Yeah, I like play in the outdoors. That's one of my passions.
So I take it you've been blind since birth, is that right?
Well, I was born legally blind, but I could see well enough to cruise around and read and do most of the things that my friends could do. And then I went blind about maybe a week or two before my freshman year in high school. I remember not being able to see mm-hmm. well enough to, like, take a step. And so that was sort of bad timing, because then, you know, basically I was being led into school my first day of high school and thinking, how lame is this?
Oh, that's tough.
Yeah.
That's tough. But it is interesting. I used to have some usable vision when I was in public school, and it's interesting to have a view of the world. I would assume that helps quite a bit when you're hiking and doing your extreme activities, so you know what the world is like around you.
Yeah, I think spatially. I think like a map. So if I can see an overview or feel an overview of something, then I can visualize it in my mind. Like before I climbed Everest, I went to the American Alpine Club, and they have a tactile topographical map of Everest, and you could actually feel it. So while I was climbing, you know, you actually can see yourself in space, like where you are in relationship to the mountain and how far you have to go and the different stages.
Yeah, even though I can't see it all now, I tend to do the same thing. I have a picture in my head of what the world is like around me, and that seems to help quite a bit.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is about some of Eric's adventures and his No Barriers organization that stems from his No Barriers approach to life.
So the first I heard of you was in the early 2000s when I heard about some blind person being the first to climb up Mount Everest. But I'm sure that wasn't your first extreme activity. Before you get into that, you had to do some more hiking and some outdoor ventures. How did you get into this extreme sports type activity?
Well, I got into it in a really just sort of down-to-earth way, which was growing up in Connecticut in the 90s, or actually 80s, late 80s. I didn't, you know, as a blind person, you get left out of ball sports. You know, when everyone else is playing baseball and playing basketball, I was just that, you know, they were really good. They tried to develop a program for me, but it was just me and this coach, and I'd like work out and train for wrestling, and he'd sort of make up things for me to do, you know, and that was fine, but you really want to be a part of a kind of a team. Wrestling for me was an incredible fulfillment of being a part of a team for the first time. But still, you get left out of so many different kinds of sports mm-hmm. that my dad would drive me up from Connecticut to the Carroll Center for the Blind. They had this recreational program. And from there, we'd embark on all these other adventures. We'd go sailing. We'd go tandem biking. We'd go snowshoeing, skiing. We did a ropes course one time. Did I say canoeing? And then one time they took us rock climbing in North Conway, New Hampshire. And I was a wiry little 16-year-old kid, and I loved it. I just loved it. Rock climbing for me was it, because I had worried that, you know, the adventure of my life was kind of over. Like, I'm just going to be kind of shoved to the sidelines and left out of things. And I hated that. That was, to me, worse than going blind. Mm-hmm. And so when I could hang from this rock face and feel my way up the rock face and sort of deduce patterns in the rock with my hands and my feet as my eyes and sort of work my way point A to point B to point C, your body has to get in all these crazy positions to get up the rock face. You know, it's complete absorbing problem solving. Mm-hmm. It's almost like active meditation, as you guys know, like when you're hiking. Mm-hmm. And you're just so engaged in this incredible thing. And I got to the top of this rock face. It wasn't even that high. It was just like 100 feet up. And I was a little bit above the trees. I could hear the valley below me. And I remember there was like, they were building a hotel or something. I could hear like the hammering and the sawing way off in the distance. I could hear the wind blowing through the leaves of the trees. I could hear the whole valley. And I just thought, like, this is it, man. I never want to do anything else.
So just before we scheduled this interview, I heard that you were up in Lake Placid climbing up ice-covered mountains. And so obviously for that, you're wearing gloves. And I'm wondering what impact that has on losing your tactile sense and how that impacts you.
So these cliffs, they're like moss-covered vertical, dead vertical. Take your hand and like run it across your bedroom wall. And they're that steep. They're vertical, straight up walls. And they get covered in winter in ice. And the ice sort of seeps out and runs down the rock. And it either can create like a freestanding icicle that you can actually climb that could be like the width of your body. And imagine a stalactite that runs down the rock and kind of separates and then connects to the ground and then actually builds and builds until it's like you're climbing like a tree trunk of ice. Mm-hmm. And those you have to be really careful because you can break them as you climb. Mm-hmm. But they'll support your body weight if they're big enough. Or just like ice that seeps out of the rock or even a frozen waterfall. And so, yeah, you're using these sharp tools. They're called ice tools. And you're scanning them. So you're really feeling through the tips of the tools.
The gloves are make an impediment?
They're not an impediment at all because you're feeling through the blades of your tools. So it's like using a cane, right? You're like, well, wait a second. That's not my hand touching it. No, it's the end of a cane touching.
It's an extension of your
You're getting own tons body. Of information. So it's just like the end of a cane, except it's the tip of a blade, of a pick of metal that you're scanning across the ice, feeling the little divots and the little concave dishes mm-hmm. where you want to swing.
A lot of these adventures that you get into seem very dangerous. Like people would say, boy, climb up a 100-foot cliff or higher, that's horrible, you could fall. It's not as safe as walking down the street for sure, but there are a lot of safety elements built in. Can you talk a little bit about how people are protected?
They can be dangerous because if you're 100 feet up and you fall, you're going to die. So mm-hmm. yeah, there's a risk, of course, but you can minimize that risk, as I said, by starting out by climbing with experienced people, sort of assess whether you can trust them. And then over time, tell them you're not just like interested in just being dragged up the rock like a sack of potatoes. You actually want to learn. Like you want to learn everything you can. You want to become as independent as you possibly can. And the right mentors will teach you. And they'll teach you about how to build anchors in the rock, how to place gear. I've even learned to lead climb, which means you're the one leading the rope up the crack or the climb. And what you're doing, you're pulling the rope up behind you and you're taking little pieces of gear, metal gear, and you're placing them in the crack. And people thought you had to see to do that, but I found that you can do it with your fingers. You can actually just feel your way up. It's obviously harder, but it's that opportunity is there.
I think there's a lot of trust built into any of these group extreme sports activities, and whether it's the blind person trusting the sighted person or vice versa, whoever puts in the anchors for the rope, the other guy is relying on them that it's going to hold.
Well, you can't see them anyway from the bottom, even if you can see. So, yeah, it's immense trust. And then, you know, when somebody's pulling up the rope behind them, you know, they have to trust that I'm going to pull rope out for them in the right way. And then I'm going to watch their back, quote unquote, watch their back. And it's all possible. Yeah, it's a huge amounts of trust built in. And, you know, people do get hurt from time to time. But it's not about being a crazy risk taker. It's more about problem solving, sort of pioneering ways forward. And then connecting yourself with the right people so that you can take that risk and minimize it to an acceptable level.
Have you ever been injured substantially on any of these ventures?
I've never been injured. I've fallen down. I mean, I've had knee injuries. I've had elbow tendonitis. You know, from when you're hanging up by your arms a lot, you get tendonitis, especially when you get older and fatter.
Yeah.
So more of my injuries are wear and tear. But luckily, I've never really had any life-threatening things happen to me. I try to avoid those. Those make for really good books and movies, but they don't really make for very good living.
That's yeah. for sure.
Yeah. yeah.
Right.
So you've had all sorts of different kind of, for lack of a better word, adventures. You've been ice climbing and mountain climbing and kayaking in white waters. And do you have any favorites, or you just keep looking for the next hurdle?
No, you know, after I climbed Everest, and this is where No Barriers, my new book, begins, is, you know, PV, who is our team leader, amazing team leader. He got us up Everest, and we came down, and we were just trashed. You know, you're just wasted. You know, you're really tired, and you're looking to get home and relax, you know. And Peavy sat me down at the bottom of Everest and he said, don't let this be the greatest thing you ever do. And so that really sets up the challenge, you know, it's like, okay, how do you not let the things, the successes that you do become a mausoleum, you know, like a funeral pyre? How do you use them as a springboard to whatever the things that you want to keep, how the ways that you want to keep moving forward? And so after that, I was getting all sorts of, you know, offers to go do all sorts of crazy things, like, you know, come and run with the bulls in Pamplona, and or you know, we're going to shoot you out of a cannon and you're going to fly across this thing and you're going to stick to the wall in a Velcro suit. It's going to be so cool. And I was like, I'm not looking just to do the next stunt. You know, I'm not like a blind evil Knievel. I want to move forward in it in fulfilling ways. And so for me, the book really begins when I got this letter from this lady from Germany. She ran a school for the blind in Tibet called Braille Without Borders, and she invited me over to climb with her kids, and we ultimately selected six of her blind Tibetan kids and climbed to 22,000 feet on the north side of Everest. And that was the highest point team of blind people I've ever been. And that was really fulfilling, you know, because I'm interacting with these incredible kids that have faced just horrendous prejudice. You know, people spit on them in the street and call them blind fools, and they were pariahs in their society. And, you know, we're now doing something that nobody in their families, nobody in their community are ever doing. And it was like a liberating thing to help them sort of break through barriers in their mind. So for me, it's always been about trying to find things that are fulfilling, but not like trying to do something riskier, scarier, or more dangerous.
So you keep a pretty active schedule of lecturing and going on these tremendous adventures. And you probably don't have a lot of time in between, but I'm wondering if you have anything special that you relax with in between, or how do you spend your in-between times?
Well, I love audiobooks. I love library services for the blind, and I love reading. Mm-hmm. I have two kids, one of them sitting over across the room right now. She's 16. Her name's Emma, and my other kid is Arjun. He's 14.
Do they get to go on any of these adventures
yeah.
with you?
Yeah, we went kayaking in Mexico in the Baja Peninsula this Thanksgiving. We jumped out of the kayak and swam with sea lions and snorkeled and kayaked around these beautiful island and camped out on the sand. They do all kinds of adventures with us. They have all hiked these Colorado 14,000 foot peaks that we call 14ers. Mm-hmm. So yeah, my kids are part of all this No Barriers adventure.
So you mentioned your newest book. You've actually written three. Can you give a quick overview of those?
Well, the first one was called Touch the Top of the World. It was a kind of a memoir about climbing the seven summits and growing up and losing my sight and sort of, you know, that, as you guys know, that could kind of rock your world and the reset that you have to make in your life. And I kind of was stubborn, so it took me a while to realize I wasn't going to ever be in the World Series. But you find other incredible adventure in your life. You know, you just have to work harder. Mm-hmm. And so that book really is the story of the seven summits and Everest. My second book was more of like a kind of a self-help book. It was called The Adversity Advantage. And it was really some tips and techniques to take adversity, which is seen as obviously a very bad thing. It's like something that we care about, that we fail at, or some kind of tragedy in our life or some kind of frustration, but how to use those things as fuel to harness that energy and sort of propel yourself to new places through that adversity. Mm-hmm. So it was a cool sort of reset for people on how to improve your relationship with adversity. And then the third one, as I mentioned, was really starts on Everest after coming down from Everest and PV's challenge to me and the building of our movement, No Barriers.
Can you talk about the No Barriers movement?
We have an organization called No Barriers, and it supports a movement. When we have our big event each year in a different mountain setting, we probably have more than 1,000 people that show up. And it's not just blind people. It's all people with challenges. And that's kind of everyone in the world. I mean, it's a crazy, eclectic community of people wanting to break through barriers and wanting to share ideas of how they've broken through barriers. From scientists, PhDs from MIT who have developed sophisticated prosthetic legs with microprocessors in the knees and ankles, to people who have developed kayaking systems for quadriplegics, to people that are sort of overcome by anxiety and fear and are looking for ideas to break out of that prison, soldiers with post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injuries, all the way to youth that are sort of just lost and looking for purpose in their lives. So it's this really, really cool community that we've built, and it's all there to celebrate sort of that map of how you move forward in your life through these challenges, and how do you navigate that map?
I think one of the really cool things that you've done with your fame, if you will, is you've opened up a lot of these experiences to other people. Because, I mean, yeah, I can read that you climb Mount Everest. Well, I'm not going to climb Mount Everest. That's, like, so far beyond my skill level. But, you know, then you take people who can do smaller feats, and they do them themselves, and they're like, wow, I did that. You know, maybe I'm going to hike a smaller mountain, but I did it, and I feel terrific when I get to the top, and I feel even better when I get to the bottom.
Well, that's why I get irritated when people make these adventures sort of competitive, or like comparing somebody to another person, because they're so deeply personal. Like at No Barriers, one of the coolest moments I had was a guy who had been injured pretty badly, and he couldn't walk down a set of stairs. He couldn't. That was like a big deal. You know, you're at the top of a set of stairs, and you got to go find an elevator. We set him up with these really cool trekking poles with really good grips and really good platforms. I think they were called Extra Striders. I can't remember what the name of them were, but anyway, he used these rubber tip trekking poles, and by leaning on these in a special way, he walked down a set of stairs. He said, "That's my Everest."
Right.
He's like, "Yeah, that's great. That's the barrier that you were breaking through today." And you don't compare yourself to anything else. You know, so it's all where you are at the time. I love that. To me, that's where the meaning is.
Everybody has their own challenges. It's a question of how you deal with it and how you choose to overcome it.
And we have an event for No Barriers called What's Your Everest? And we hike a mountain in Colorado, usually a pretty reasonable one, but we have some people with severe mobility problems. So, like, you guys could, like, work with people and help guide them and push them. Sometimes they're in wheelchairs and they're cranking their way up the mountain with their arms. And everyone gets down and dirty and gets helping, you know, others to all reach the summit together.
And you've probably run into this. I don't know how many summits we've been on, and someone will figure out that Pete's blind and can't see the view. And, of course, in the Adirondacks, there's usually clouds. Nobody can see the
view. Doesn't matter anyway.
And they're like, well, why did you climb this mountain? You can't see anything from the top. And there's just so many other reasons to climb the mountain besides the view.
Yeah, I think I'm getting surly as I get older, but that's the dumbest thing that people say. Because it's like, well, you know, the view is maybe 1% of why you climb to the top of something.
You know, someone told us many years ago, it's not always the end goal that's of interest.
Right.
It's the journey there and how you get there and enjoying the journey.
I used to keep a postcard of the view from Everest, from the summit. And they're like, oh, you know, the view. You didn't climb it for the view. And like, well, and you just pull out the postcard and you go, okay, now you saved yourself a 3-month expedition. That's the view from the summit. And you're good to go. Then. That's what you think.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And they got it on a clear day.
Yeah.
Now for this week's final item, how to learn more about Eric's adventures and the No Barriers movement, and how to get his books.
So if people want to find out more about No Barriers, where would you direct them?
They can go to nobarriersusa.org, and you can learn about all our events. Our big one is called our summit. This year we're going to be in Squaw Creek, California, which we like to go around the country and kind of open up this idea to lots of communities. So that'll really be good for the West Coast.
Where's Squaw Creek?
Squaw Creek is in the Sierra Nevadas of California. People come from all over the place. They come from, you know, Scotland and Japan and Hong Kong. It's crazy, you know. And then the next one in 2018 will be in New York City. So that'll open us up to a big metropolitan community.
And if people have questions or want to contact the organization, How can they do that?
Yeah, they can write to the website, nobarriersusa.org, or they can write us at touchthetop.com, and we try to get back to everyone. What's great is that it's not specific to one kind of disability. It's so cool because you're sitting at breakfast. Maybe to your left is a little person next to a person who's trying to figure out how to manage pain because they've been hurt in some way, and they're trying to figure out, you know, not just to go on lots of painkillers, but how do you manage pain through yoga or through these alternative therapies? Maybe like a CEO is trying to figure out how to manage and lead his team through that change process. And you just, it's really cool because you're just around these great people. Maybe a person with a, who's had a complete heart transplant. And she's like, well, what can I do in the outdoors? You know, what can I do in my life still? It's just so cool to be around this community of people who all are looking to grow and move forward in some exciting way. And it's all so different. That's what I love about it. It fills my cup every year.
And can you remind us of the titles of your three books and where people can obtain them?
So my first book is Touch the Top of the World, and my second is The Adversity Advantage, and my third is called No Barriers. So yeah, you can get the trifecta of our message.
And where can people find those books?
They're everywhere. I think they're talking books. I mean, I think the National Braille Press will have the third book out soon, also in bookstores.
So people can find them in almost any format.
That's what we try to make accessible for every kind of format, yeah.
Can they get them directly from you, or you encourage people to go to their other sources?
They can go to our website, but it's so much easier to go to Amazon or Audible.com, you know, those kind of things. But yeah, they can go to touchthetop.com. And we sell some really cool films as well. A lot of my adventures we filmed, like a trip we did with injured soldiers up a peak called Lobache in the Himalayas, or this peak that we climbed with these blind Tibetan teenagers, or the documentary of our Everest ascent. So I've been lucky to be part of these really awesome documentaries.
And as usual, if you're looking for any of that contact information, you can go to our show notes associated with this episode at www.eyesonsuccess.net. We'll also have information about the Carroll Center for the Blind and their recreational program, where Eric started getting interested in some of these activities.
That's it for show 1713. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking with a blind software engineer. Computers are very accessible to the visually impaired these days. There are also many attractive employment opportunities for people who have computer-related skills, particularly if they know how to program. We'll talk with Tom Schultz, a blind engineer, about his career and how he has used these skills in developing new hardware devices through programming. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com, at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.